Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Good evening, everyone. Okay, we have been studying the Samadhitti Sutta. This is the Discourse on Right View, Sutta number 9 in the Majjhima Nikaya. And last week, I went through the section on the Four Noble Truths. I have to admit, I went a little hastily through the section on the Noble Eightfold Path. But I don't intend to explain it in detail now, because last semester, was it? Two semesters ago, we did a detailed explanation. And if anybody wants more detailed information on the Noble Eightfold Path, there's a small book. Also, it's available on the internet, called simply The Noble Eightfold Path. I don't remember the author. Okay, so now we come to the next section of the sutta. We are on page 135, starting on section 20. This will actually begin a section, this section will begin a series which will take in couplets the terms of the standard 12-fold formula of paticca-samuppada, dependent origination, dependent arising. But the text doesn't even use the expression dependent origination, because it doesn't lay out the whole formula all at once, but it just takes each pair of factors in their conditioning relationship. Okay, so in paragraph 20, the monks rejoice in the Venerable Sariputta's explanation of right view by way of the Four Noble Truths, and then ask him if there is another way in which a noble disciple can be one of right view, who has, etc., etc., arrived at this true Dhamma. Venerable Sariputta says that there can be, and then in section 21 he says, when, friends, a noble disciple understands aging and death, also sometimes translated old age and death, the origin of aging and death, the cessation of aging and death, and the way leading to the cessation of aging and death, in that way, he is one of right view who has, etc., arrived at this true Dhamma. Now, before I go further, I think it's significant that first, when the Buddha explains dependent origination in the suttas, he often presents it, in different ways, sometimes starting from the end, working back to the beginning, sometimes from the beginning, working down to the end, sometimes picking some point in the middle, and then working either down to the end or back to the beginning. So we have these different methods of treatment found throughout the suttas. But when the Buddha explains or gives the account of his own enlightenment, in which he discovered this formula of dependent origination for the first time, he begins with old age and death and then works back to the beginning. And this is what I would call a more significant way to approach the formula. And we find that that is the way that Venerable Sariputta proceeds here. Because when we take it from the end and work back to the beginning, we're starting, just as the Four Noble Truths do, we're starting from the problem of suffering here in its starkest, most urgent, most painful manifestation, the problem of what we don't want. We don't mind falling ill once in a while if it's not too bad. We don't mind the little bumps and discomforts of life, but what we don't want is to grow old and to die. So old age and death, that is in a sense, you can say, a crystallization of the whole problem of suffering, the fact of our mortality. And for the Indian mind, old age and death means, against the background of that period, not experiencing them just once and everything finished, but going through this process again and again and again. And so one begins with aging and death, and one embarks upon an investigation, an exploration. One sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya uses the expression sammasana, which I like to translate as exploration, exploring what is the conditions for each of these factors. And so one is now going back and investigating, from what does this arise? How does this come to be? When one goes from the beginning, from the first factor down to the end, that is in a sense an explanation from the standpoint of one who has completely already discovered the chain of conditionality, the chain of causation. But when we go from the end to the beginning, the exposition sort of pulls us along as we go deeper and deeper into this chain of causation, taking us back to the most fundamental conditions. Okay, and so we start with aging and death. And then after giving this, remember I used a few classes back the expression udesa, the short, condensed presentation of the teaching. Now, in paragraph 22, Venerable Sariputta embarks upon the nidesa, the detailed explanation. For those who weren't present, I think everybody was, but I'll write those two terms. Okay, so now to explain the terms of the udesa, the short presentation, Sariputta starts with these questions. What is aging and death? And so on. What is the origin of aging and death? What is the cessation of aging and death? What is the way leading to the cessation of aging and death? And then he takes aging and death and breaks it down. We have two words combined here. He breaks it down into two separate words. First, aging. What is aging or old age? the aging of beings in the various orders, the realms of existence of beings, their old age, brokenness of teeth, grayness of hair, wrinkling of skin, decline of life, weakness of faculties. This is called aging. And what is death? The passing of beings out of the various orders of beings, or different, out from the different realms of existence. They're passing away, dissolution, disappearance, dying, completion of time, completing their lifespan. The Pali word actually means doing their time. But in American English, to do one's time, I think, means to spend time in prison. Then dissolution of the aggregates, the breakup of this combination of the five aggregates, the laying down of the body, this is called death. So this aging and this death are what is called aging and death. And I've always appreciated how precisely and how realistically the sutta texts define aging and death. And here I have to make a very important statement to be a little polemical for a few moments. But there's a fashion in interpreting and explaining dependent origination, a modern fashion, to say it's not really about describing the process of rebirth, passing away and being reborn, but to make it sound sort of more appealing to skeptical people, skeptical moderns, it said that, well, aging and death, or death means the arising and passing away of thoughts. So this is what is meant by aging and death, when sometimes we think a beautiful thought, then that thought passes away. That is death. Sometimes we think an angry or a jealous thought, that thought passes away. That is aging and death. And then sometimes it's said, also this applies to birth, I haven't yet come to the definition of birth, but in this fashion of interpreting dependent origination, so what is birth? Birth is the arising of a particular type of thought, and death is the passing away of that thought. So when you think, for example, a generous thought, a very noble thought, that's being reborn in the heavens. And then when you think an angry, wrathful thought, or a jealous thought, or an angry, wrathful thought, that's being reborn in hell. And when you think a stingy, selfish thought, that's being reborn as a ugwei, as a hungry ghost. When you think a very just greedy thought for food or sex, that's being reborn as an animal. But if you, and then when those thoughts pass away, that is death. But if you look at the texts give very exact, very literal explanations of aging and death. And what's characteristic of the suttas, the Nikayas, is that when the Buddha is speaking about using a term metaphorically or in the context of a simile, at the end of his statement, he will indicate that he's using that term metaphorically or as part of a simile. He will say, when I refer to, for example, a simile of the herd of deer, what is the herd of deer? That is a designation for sentient beings. What is the dangerous swamp, that is a simile or a designation for sense pleasures? What is the man who intends the harm for the herd of deer? That is Mara, the evil one. So the Buddha explains when he's using metaphorical terms, he indicates that he's using that. But in all the suttas on dependent origination, I can't think of any which indicates that he's using old age and death as metaphorical terms. Okay, so this is aging and this is death, and together they are called aging and death. Then the second question, what was the origin of aging and death? What is the origin? With the arising of birth, there is the arising of aging and death. With the cessation of birth, there is the cessation of aging and death. And the way leading to the cessation of aging and death is just this Noble Eightfold Path. Okay, so we have birth here set out as the condition, the cause for the occurrence of aging and death. So if we ask, why do we undergo death? On a death certificate, there's a space which says cause of death. We'll say cause of death, heart failure, cause of death. Lung cancer, cause of death, automobile accident, cause of death, with sclerosis of the liver, whatever. But there should be really be two spaces for the cause of death. One you call accidental cause of death, the other necessary essential cause of death for everybody. That the coroner doesn't have to write with his own ink, but it could just be printed on every death certificate. Essential cause of death, birth. Okay, then I gave this handout, one of the handouts here. This is from the Great Discourse on Causation, the Mahanidana Sutta. Please look at paragraph 4, which explains how we are to understand that birth is the condition for aging and death. Here the Buddha is speaking with Venerable Ananda. He says, how this is so, Ananda, should be understood in this way. If there were absolutely and utterly no birth of any kind anywhere, that is, no birth of gods, of devas, into the state of gods, no birth of celestials, I think these are Gandharvas, the Gandharvas, into the state of the celestials, no birth of the spirits, these are the yakshas, into the state of the yakshas, of the demons, into the state of the demons, those are the bhutas, of human beings, quadrupeds, winged creatures like birds and bats, and reptiles, each into their own state. If there were no birth of beings of any sort into any state, then in the complete absence of birth, with the cessation of birth, would aging and death be discerned. And Venerable Ananda says, no he tang bante, certainly not, Venerable Sir. And so the Buddha says, therefore, Ananda, this is the cause, the source, the origin, and condition for aging and death, namely birth. Okay, so this makes it very clear, if there was any doubt at all, but this shows very graphically, in a very extended way, giving a little survey of all the different states of existence, or types of beings, into which one could be born, when the sutta that we just read reads about, we didn't come to birth yet. But this takes all the different types of birth, and it makes it clear that if there were no birth of any kind anywhere, then there could not be any aging and death anywhere of any kind. And so for this reason, we can know that birth is the cause or condition for aging and death. And then the way to end aging and death is the Noble Eightfold Path. When cultivating that, one makes an end to the process of rebirths. One makes an end to birth, and thereby puts an end to aging and death. So when one understands this much, then one is of right view. Okay, so in paragraph 24, the monks again expressed their appreciation of Venerable Sariputta's words. And then they ask him whether it's possible to explain right view in another way. And of course, this is the question leading on further down the chain of causation. And so Venerable Sariputta says, when a noble disciple understands now birth, the origin of birth, the cessation of birth, and the way leading to the cessation of birth, in that way he is one of right view, and so on, who has arrived at this true Dhamma. Okay, that's the brief statement, and now we come to the elaboration. Okay, what is birth? What is the origin of birth? What is the cessation of birth? And what is the way leading to the cessation of birth? Okay, birth, here comes the definition, the birth of beings in the various orders of beings. And in the statement, the definition from the Great Discourse on Causation, we went through these different orders of beings. Their coming to birth, their precipitation, or better, descent into the womb, their generation, the manifestation of the aggregates, obtaining the basis for contact. This is called birth. And with the arising of being, well, now I prefer existence, there is the arising of birth with the cessation of being or existence. There is the cessation of birth, and the way leading to the cessation of birth is just this Noble Eightfold Path. From right view to right concentration. Okay, this definition of birth introduces or displays an interesting distinction that already appears in the definition of death. I didn't pick it up there, but it's a little clearer in the definition of birth. We have two ways of explaining birth. One is by ways of, we might call, the conventional terminology for birth. That is, words like birth. Here the Indian words are used, the descent into the womb. And what's meant by birth, actually, strictly speaking, is the moment, by jati, strictly speaking, it's the moment of conception, not the coming out from the womb. Though when people ordinarily speak about jati, maybe they think of coming out from the womb into the light of day. But in the strict manner of speaking, birth, you know, from a technical standpoint, refers to that moment, that occasion of conception. So therefore it's called descent into the womb, or generation. But then what follows this are two technical terms special to the Buddha's teaching. By birth is meant the manifestation of the aggregates and obtaining the basis for contact. So what happens when conception takes place is that when we look at it externally, we think just of an egg being fertilized by a sperm cell. And then when fertilization takes place, the egg starts to undergo a process of development. And we think that is fertilization, or that is conception. But what is actually taking place, according to the Buddha's teaching, when conception takes place, is not simply that the egg has been fertilized and now has become activated and has turned into a living organism, but that a stream of consciousness from a deceased person, a deceased living being, has connected with that fertilized egg cell. And it is that stream of consciousness that enables fertilization to actually take place. If there weren't a stream of consciousness ready, in a sense, metaphorically, waiting for the opportunity to descend into the womb, then even though the sperm were to penetrate the egg, fertilization would not take place. Or if the egg I don't know what happens at the biological level, maybe the sperm tries to penetrate the egg but doesn't succeed. But it is the presence of a consciousness, stream of consciousness, which in one of the Buddhist texts, it's called the Gandhava or Gandharva, that serves as the contributing cause, contributing condition for fertilization. And when fertilization takes place, then all five aggregates spring into existence simultaneously. The aggregate of bodily form, material form, is contributed by the egg, the fertilized egg. But the consciousness that springs up based upon that fertilized egg is the aggregate of consciousness. And along with consciousness comes feeling, perception, and volitions. Volitional formations. And so we have all of these five aggregates present at the same time. And then even though the functioning of the mind or consciousness, it's very, very rudimentary at the very moment of conception. But it inherits all of the, say, the accumulated experience, all the accumulated impressions, the whole bank of memories and dispositions and tendencies of the deceased being and of the lives and lives and lives beyond that, going back through beginningless time. All of those just pass into that one occasion of consciousness which springs up at the moment of conception. And that is birth, the manifestation of the aggregates. It is also called the obtaining of the bases for contact. What are these bases for contact? They're called pasayatana. In the case of human beings, at the moment of conception, first, altogether there are six bases for contact. The eye, ear, nose, tongue, the whole sensitive body, and the mind base. Now, in the case of assume the devas, the heavenly beings, certain other types of beings, perhaps the hell beings, I would assume. When they are born, all six bases for contact come into being simultaneously, because those beings are reborn by spontaneous birth. I think they are. At least... At least most of the devas are. There might be a few exceptions, I'm not sure. Okay, but so the devas, the gods, they come into being, all six sense organs are functioning at once. But in the case of human beings, at the moment of conception, only two bases come into existence or are obtained at the moment of conception. What are these two bases? Any guess? Exactly. The body base, because that one-celled organism, the fertilized egg, is the base for the, it's what's going to develop into the body. And the mind base, which is the consciousness itself, is what functions as the mind base. Then as that one cell starts to divide and divide and divide over time, different cells become more specialized and start to emerge and take on a distinct shape, and they start to acquire specialized functions, and they turn into the eye base, ear base, nose base, and tongue base. And by the way, the ear base is not this thing that can be wiggled here, but it is type of material, sensitive matter located somewhere deep in here, which is well protected so that it can't be injured. It is that kind of matter that is sensitive to sounds that can transform sound air currents into meaningful sounds. And the nose base is not this thing here, but it is something up here that is able to perceive smells, or to serve as a base for the perception of smells, of sense. Also, in the definition of death, we have one of those terms that refers to these specifically Buddhist conceptions of the person, the dissolution of the aggregates. Okay, so this is birth, and we have the arising of being or existence. Through the arising of existence, there is the arising of birth. I'm not going to explain that now. I'm going to explain that after we have gone through the elaboration of being or existence, because it's better to first elaborate what is meant by being or existence. So we'll just pass on from the section on birth. We now come to the section on being or existence. Okay, again, the monks express their delight in Venerable Sariputta's words and ask him if there can be another way in which a disciple is of right view. And Venerable Sariputta says there is, and then he continues. When, friends, a noble disciple understands being, let's use existence, understands existence, the origin of existence, the cessation of existence, and the way leading to the cessation of existence. In that way, he is one of right view who has, etc., arrived at this true Dhamma. Okay, then the questions. What is existence? What is the origin of existence? What is the cessation of existence? What is the way leading to the cessation of existence? Then the answers. There are these three kinds of existence: sense-sphere existence, fine material existence, and immaterial existence. With the arising of clinging, there is the arising of existence. With the cessation of clinging, there is the cessation of existence. And the way leading to the cessation of existence is just this noble eightfold path that is right view and so on through right concentration. Okay, what are these three kinds of existence? To understand them, we have to take a little tour. I've given this tour before, I think, but I always enjoy giving it again, especially since it might be a year or so since I gave it. And there are tour guides, I think at Duangyan Monastery, you have tour guides who give the tour every weekend or a few times a week, so it doesn't hurt if I give it once a year. I don't have to write them all. If you have the middle-length discourses, the introduction gives a more detailed breakdown. So we have the sense sphere existence with the lower worlds, the hells, the animal realm, the realm of the sometimes called hungry ghosts or tormented spirits. Then those are the miserable realms. And then the happy sense sphere types of existence, the human world, the six deva realms. Okay, the sense sphere realm has a barrier above it that one can't break through by ordinary states of consciousness. If one is very good, very virtuous, very generous, very loving, still one cannot break through the sense sphere heavenly realms to go to the divine or super divine worlds above, the worlds that belong to the fine material sphere of existence, the realms of subtle form. To go into those, to be reborn in those realms of existence, one has to develop the jhanas, the meditative absorptions. One has to develop, obtain the jhanas, and master a particular jhana. And there are many divisions within the fine material realm, corresponding to the different jhanas, the four main jhanas, and then according to the degree of mastery over the jhana, there are different realms of existence within those four main divisions in the divine realms. And then one goes to the top of the super divine realms, and there is another barrier there that one can't break through, even with the jhanas. That barrier, to break through that barrier, one has to go beyond the form jhanas. The ordinary, well, no jhana is ordinary, they're all extraordinary, but one has to go beyond the fourth jhana and obtain, as a meditator, in the human world, one has to obtain the formless jhanas, at least the first formless jhana called the base of infinite space. And if one obtains that and gets some degree of mastery over it, that becomes the cause or condition for rebirth into the realm of infinite space. Then above that is the realm of infinite consciousness, the realm of nothingness, the realm of neither perception nor non-perception. So all of these different realms of existence are, in a sense, manifestations of our own karma, our own accumulations of karma. It's our own karmic accumulations that build up, you could say, the different states within the round of existence. It doesn't mean that all the realms of existence are just projections of mind. The material world, for us, it's quite real and solid. But the reason why we are living in this physical world in which we are now is because we created in an earlier life the karma that brought us to the human realm. If we create the karma of a hell being, of an animal. Next life, it's woof, woof. Or meow, meow. And if we create the karma of a heavenly being, being very generous, very helpful to others, the next life, it's very beautiful and wonderful world will manifest before us. Not this dreary, painful, miserable human realm in which we are now. Okay, so now we come to the statement that existence is the condition for birth. Now, the way the commentators explain this they say that this is something of a puzzle that because if we take existence in the sense in which I just explained it becomes a little bit of a puzzle how existence itself is a condition for birth. It just seems that the states of existence are there. They are like, you could say, that the different rooms of this corridor are the conditions for the different classes to take place. Say if there is a lecture in the lecture hall, a discussion in Chinese in classroom one, a Pali class in classroom two, then we could say these classrooms, the lecture hall, are the conditions for those classes and lectures to take place. But that doesn't seem to be saying anything very significant. Just that there are these spaces there for these classes to take place. Okay, the way the commentators explain existence here, they say that what is meant by existence is not the state of being into which one is reborn, but rather the karmic force that leads to rebirth into these particular realms of existence. So what's meant by sense-sphere existence is not these realms of existence themselves, but the karma that leads to existence into those, that leads to existence in those states of existence. By fine material existence is not meant the divine realms, the super divine realms themselves, but the karma, that is the jhanic attainments that lead to rebirth into those realms. And by immaterial existence or formless existence is not meant the formless realms themselves, but the states of consciousness or the attainments, the meditative attainments that lead to rebirth into the formless states of existence. I haven't found a really explicit explanation of existence quite in that way in the suttas, but there's one little sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya which seems to give some support to this idea. I had that distributed as a handout. Here again, it's the Buddha speaking to Venerable Ananda. It's actually Venerable Ananda comes to the Buddha with the question. Here's the same word translated as becoming. Don't be confused. It's the same word, bhava. B-H-A-V-A. Bhava. Okay, one speaks, Lord, of becoming, becoming, or existence, existence. How does existence take place? Then the Buddha says, if, Ananda, there were no karma ripening in the sense-sphere realm, would there appear any sense-sphere existence? Surely not, Lord. Therefore, Ananda, karma is the field, consciousness is the seed, and craving is the moisture. For the consciousness of beings hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving to become established in a lower realm. By the lower realm is meant the sense-sphere realm of existence. Thus there is future re-becoming. Here the text uses the expression ayating, ayating punabhavabhi nibhati. The manifestation of new existence in the future. Okay, then if there were no karma ripening in the form realm, would there appear any form sphere existence? Surely not, Lord. Therefore, Ananda, karma is the field, consciousness the seed, and so on. For the consciousness of beings to become established in an intermediate realm. The intermediate realm is the form realm, or one of those divine realms making up the form realm. If there were no karma ripening in the formless realm, the immaterial realm, would there appear any formless sphere becoming, any formless sphere existence, immaterial existence? Surely not, Lord. Therefore, Ananda, karma is the field, consciousness the seed, and so on, for the consciousness of beings to become established in a lofty realm, a high realm. Thus there is re-becoming in the future. Thus there is the manifestation of future new existence. It is in this way, Ananda, that there is existence. So this is a sutta passage which seems to lend support to the explanation of the commentators. Then this explanation of the commentators is not something unique to Buddhaghosa and the Pali commentators. But just the other day I was looking through the Chungpho Che Dao, Master Yinshun's Way to Buddhahood, and I came across this quotation. You know, I don't think he got this from Buddhaghosa, but probably from some treatise translated from an Indian Buddhist text preserved in Chinese. Okay, this is from page 137 of the English translation. The existence described in dependent origination is not the existence, that means existence in this sense, of the present life, but the karmic force that brings about future life, and it can be described as the potential for future life. Once this element exists, when the present life ends, consciousness is bound to be reborn again. Okay, then I also remembered a passage from Jeffrey Hopkins' book called Meditation on Emptiness. This is a book which summarizes the teachings of the Tibetan Gelugpa school, and it has a section on dependent origination. Okay, Jeffrey Hopkins says, existence, this is the same term, is a case of giving the name of the effect to the cause, for it is the potency established by action or karma, nourished by attachment and grasping, that has become empowered to develop into the next life. Attachment, grasping, and existence are causes that come to manifestation in the next life. So from these texts, from all three traditions, Southern Theravada, Chinese Mahayana, actually reflecting an Indian, probably an early Indian text, maybe it's the Abhidharma Kosha that Master Yinshin is referring to, and the meditation on emptiness, perhaps a late Indian Mahayana text. They all interpret bhava existence in the same way. Okay, at this point I'll stop and ask if there are any questions. Please feel free to ask. David?
Yes, Bhante. The realm of existence, does karma actually create the realm of existence?
I wouldn't say that karma creates them. The realms of existence are there. But karma is what brings rebirth into these realms.
Conception is that within and among all beings? Not just human beings.
Conception.
And when you're talking about how there has to be a stream of consciousness.
For all beings, there would have to be a stream of consciousness. So there has to be conception for all beings. But it's not the case that for all beings, conception takes place in a womb. Well, we already know that there are beings for whom conception takes place in eggs. But there are other beings, as I mentioned, that we don't ordinarily see, that are reborn by what is called spontaneous birth. That means that this would be like a heavenly birth, a being passes away as a human being, then just somehow, just in a split second, they spring into existence fully formed. Where's the next party? George?
I had heard of the notion of dependent origination as applying to states of mind or thoughts associated with Buddha Ghosa.
With Buddha Ghosa?
Is that, did he originate that interpretation?
The idea of dependent origination applying to his thoughts. No, I think Buddha Ghosa is an exponent of we call the traditional interpretation. It's a almost contemporary teacher, a late Achan Buddhadasa.
Oh, Buddhadasa.
Yeah. From Thailand. He is one who developed, I don't want to be singling anybody out, but yeah, I've seen him give an explanation of this idea of birth, is it birth, as meaning the arising of a particular type of thought. And then he said that if one interprets birth in the suttas literally, then one doesn't really understand the correct method for interpreting the suttas. One shouldn't interpret the suttas literally. But when the suttas speak about birth, that's just a metaphor for the arising of particular types of thoughts. And so if one thinks good, noble thoughts, that's a rebirth in heaven. If one thinks angry, hateful thoughts, that's a rebirth in hell. But if you see the way the sutta explains birth, it's rather difficult to apply that to a thought. Yeah.
May I ask?
Of course, yeah.
On the same topic, Bhante, if we take that explanation of birth and origin and death here, literally,
yeah,
we have some problems, for example, with the Arya Paramesana Sutra, where it's applied to gold and silver. And also I wanted to say that, to my knowledge, the idea of using Paticca-samuppada for mind moments is already found in the Vibhanga.
That is so.
Which is the very early Abhidhamma,
yeah,
that we have.
Yeah.
I think it is possible to see it as complementary to the three lines.
Yeah, that is a good point. Except that when the Vibhanga speaks about dependent origination as applying to single mind moments, it is not using birth, old age, and death in the same sense in which it's used in the suttas. And I think if we look at the Vibhanga together, you'll see that it explains old age and death in a different way than it's defined in the suttas. It doesn't explain it in the same way. There was quite a distinct difference in the definition of... It might not even use the words old age and death in relation to when it applies dependent origination to single mind moments. It might have been different terms used. Yeah. And as applying to gold and silver, of course, in this, you wouldn't take all of the terms of this definition. Here one needs a little flexibility. But gold and silver does deteriorate, and I don't know if it perishes, because gold is said to be...
I'm not sharing the live interpretation.
Yeah.
I think it's very valid and it's an important point that you're making.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think there's a little more space for seeing this other thing as a complementary.
Definitely so. Definitely there's. Definitely there's a way to apply it to individual mind moments. But I think that's a different way of understanding it than the 12 factors. The 12-factor series mentioned in the suttas. And I think the danger comes, what I wanted to correct is the tendency to explain away the method, the terms in the suttas in a way, to explain that sequence in a way that denies that they apply to different lifetimes. Okay, if there's anybody has one more question, we have time for one more question. Eva?
It's the karma that leads to the next rebirth. And under those three different realms, I can understand the human's realm and the six-day realm, with many opportunities to generate different karma. But how about in the lower realm, like the past animal health and the super divine realms, or even the material realm? Is it possible you can generate karma over there?
Can we generate karma in those realms? I think so. Exactly how it works, I don't know. certainly in the Brahma realms, one could generate, in these, what I call the super divine realms, one generates karma. Of course, Brahmas, at least the way they're depicted in the suttas, they sometimes seem very human. Sometimes they're proud, deluded. Sometimes very humble, respectful. So they definitely generate karma. And even the formless realm, I don't know how it would happen, since they don't have any bodies. But I mean, this is treated in the Abhidhamma, that they have states of consciousness, and those states of consciousness generate karma. They can have attachment to some to their meditative experiences, and then that would be an unwholesome state of consciousness, an unwholesome karma. They don't, I think in the formless realm it said states of anger or hatred don't arise, since they don't have perception of other beings there, so they're okay, then we have to stop now. Okay, then we share the merits with all beings throughout the Deva realms, the realm of the Buddhas, the harmful spirits, the Nagas, the dragon spirits, and all beings, wishing them to rejoice in these merits, to protect the Buddha Sasana, protect the world, and protect ourselves and others. Akasata chabumata deva naga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu sasanam. Akasata chabumata deva naga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu desanam. Akasata chabumata deva naga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu mang parang. Etavata cha amhehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata cha amhehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata cha amhehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe sata anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya.